And speaking of Christmas, probably most of you are like me. I love this time of year. It's a real delight. Even if I can't sing like Andy Williams, I can proclaim like him that it is the most wonderful time of the year. It's a great opportunity for families to gather together. Great time for those Christmas parties maybe that you have at your work or just in your house and neighborhood. Great chance to drag out that ugly Christmas sweater and nobody will complain to you about it because you have the right to wear it at this time of year. And of course, you get that chance too to eat all that food that you're not allowed to the rest of the year. You can overdose on the flour and the sugar and the gluten and all those kinds of things because it's just that wonderful time of the year. And yet at the same time, for a lot, this the most stressful time of the year. And you have to stop and ask yourself, now why is that? If it's something so sweet and so tender, what makes it so stressful? You know, when I think about seasons like Easter or even the 4th of July, I don't really see people all stressed out during those times. So what is it about Christmas that brings on that heavy load that often we'll feel? And I think we can probably summarize it with the idea that we have all these expectations. In some cases, it's our own wants, what we want to either receive or we want to have happen, or our perceived expectations of what somebody else wants and us wanting to meet that want that they might have. My brother, when his son was really young, he had a time where he was sitting down with him going over his Christmas list. And my nephew says, you know, the one thing that I want for Christmas is that Lego set of the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars. And my brother said, the problem with that gift was $100 by itself. So he began to sort of couch his son's expectations and let him know, you know, son, that's a pretty big gift. And that, you might want to start thinking about that one for your birthday instead of something like Christmas. To which his son said, oh, don't worry, Dad. I'll just ask Santa. You don't have to worry about that. And in so doing, he almost increased the stress on my brother right there because he knew, oh, this is going to be one sad little boy come Christmas morning when that Millennium Falcon isn't there. There's something about stuff that at times will make us, or at least we feel like it'll make us happy, isn't there? How much do we need to be happy? The old saying answers the question by saying, just a little bit more than what we have right now. That's the way life often comes at us, the way we approach it many times. That old billionaire tycoon, J. Paul Getty, got asked one time by a reporter. He said, you know, we understand that if you were to retire now, your holdings would be worth more than $1 billion. Is that true? And have you considered that? And he thought for a second, he replied, and he says, you know, that might be true, but you need to remember, $1 billion doesn't go nearly as far as it used to. In our society, that weighs on us. We are a culture about getting what we want, taking care of things like we want. We're an affluent culture. And as a result, there's this thing within us that we want to be like everybody else. We want to get what we want and have it all. And as a result, as a culture, it has us living on credit. It's given us an insatiable lust for sex. It's pushed us into this widespread restlessness about us. Jesus Christ is the one who made this comment. He said, your life does not consist of the things that you possess. And yet, we have an entire industry on Madison Avenue that is bent on convincing us otherwise. We do want the things. Billboards come out in these images. When you're going down the interstate, you see them mile after mile, letting you know of what you don't have, but what you probably want to possess. This is the time of year where we're singing jingle bells, and at the same time, we've got those Christmas jingles telling us about those things and planting them in our minds about what else we need to get in order to be happy, or for what we need to get for somebody else in order to make them happy. The sponsor on TV, they've got 30 seconds to convince you that you should have gone to Jared's to make that woman happy. and get her that jewelry. Now, there's 100 different ways that the society, that the marketers are trying to convince us that you don't have what you want, that life does consist of your possessions. And often we get brainwashed into sort of taking them seriously. And yet, the irony is, even if we do get those things, they don't fill us. It doesn't satisfy us for very long. Yesterday's mansion that we wanted so bad is today's boarding house, and it becomes tomorrow's slum. That ultra-high-speed computer with all that RAM on it that you wanted, you know, now is a laughing stock compared to the technology that's out. And tomorrow, you won't even do anything but consider throwing it in the junk heap. Yesterday's fashion, what is it? That's today's hand-me-down. It's certainly tomorrow's giving over to Goodwill. Those things, they fade very quickly with us. And possessions often are just like food in our belly. They can fill us for about an hour. And then after 1 or 2 hours have gone by, we start to get those hunger pains surface again and the things that we want. And what's true with possessions, frankly, is the same thing with circumstances sometimes too. We want things good. We want circumstances and things to be in control and to be unfolding the way that we like it and we want. And with enough time, even a situation that we're content with, we'll just want it to be a little bit different. A new job, maybe some of the new challenges that we could find out there. Better health, more money, a better government. You know, we'll want better leaders. I don't know if any of y'all heard about that Supreme Court ruling this past week that came out. No live nativity scene on the Washington Mall anymore. Can't have it. And it wasn't made for legal reasons, and it wasn't even made for political reasons. It was simply because they couldn't find three wise men within the D.C. area to take on that role. When it comes to the government, we're left wanting. Sometimes we can't even discern what it is that we want until maybe a circumstance comes our way, and that has a way of sort of giving us much more of a laser focus on what's really important. When that lab report comes in, it'll get us thinking real simple, won't we, on our wants and desires. Pink slip is coming across your desk. A relationship begins to dissolve. And then clarity comes to play. We do get simple real fast. And it's good for us sometimes to hear from somebody else that has that simplicity. They've got that focus and they can bring it for us to consider. We need Ebenezer Scrooge's three spirits to occasionally visit us as well, don't we? Someone who can come and bring things into focus and remind us maybe of some of the things that we have forgotten or just alerted us to some of the things that maybe we've even just become blind to. Somebody that can help us get above all the white noise that's going on around us and the jingles on the loudspeaker and the, you know, clean up on aisle three and all those sounds that we encounter as we're going about in the bustle of life. Somebody that can make us stop. And just think for a little bit. Start to reflect. Psalm 23 does that for us. Written by somebody who did figure out exactly what they wanted. And penned by the shepherd David. And at some point in his life, he had the opportunity to kind of sit back and to think. Maybe he wrote this when he was still a shepherd. Maybe he wrote it when he was older as a king. And he's looking back and remembering the times when he was over a flock of sheep and just some of the things that he thought of and a lot of those idle hours that he had. Shepherd, that's kind of an occupation somewhat lost to us now. Not many people around us, there's a few around us that own sheep, but for the most part, we don't really know and understand what goes on there. We don't see sheep very much unless you work your way to the petting zoo maybe, and then you'll find them and encounter them. Psalm 23 brings us into the presence of these sheep. And it's almost going to be like a fairy tale because at least for the first few verses, the sheep is going to be the one who talks to us, tells us some things about what he knows and what he's learned. And this sheep has a clarity of which I am speaking about. He knows exactly what he wants. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Now we can look at the sheep and we could say, really? Okay, you know that. What do you mean when you say you don't want, Mr. Sheep? I mean, that's quite a boast. And when you say you don't want, what does it mean for you? How would you explain that and define it? And so what he does is he takes us up on that question. And he's going to answer it for us and reveal some things to us. This sheep, he's not a child, he's not an infant, not even a teenager. This one's got some years on him. He's made his way sort of around the different areas and regions. He's seen different flocks too. Maybe he's even had different shepherds. And he knows about some of the ones that are over here that are good and well cared for. And he's seen some sheep over here too that are very ragged and living on the ragged edge. And he's going to make this declaration to us. If you're coming to me for wisdom on what do you want with your life in your life, I got an answer for you. And he said, my wants are going to be directly related to the care that I get in my shepherd. My wants are directly tied to who my shepherd is. So let me tell you a little bit about my shepherd, he says. First thing about my shepherd, he is a fantastic leader. He makes me lie down in green pastures. My shepherd leads me beside quiet waters. Sheep are probably some of the dumbest animals on the planet. They can't plan. They can't really think. They just sort of wander about. The ones in the back of the herd only know to follow the ones in the front, and the ones in the front only know to follow what's directly in front of them. They don't know where to find the good pastures. And so as a result, they don't plan. But this sheep says, guess what? I don't have to plan. Not in this case, because I have a shepherd who knows what I need to know. And because he knows what I need to know, he will take me to the places where I'll be cared for. He'll take me to the places where I can be fed. Sometimes a stream, maybe due to a rain, will begin to go beyond its banks, generate a strong current. Or maybe if snow is melting from the mountains, it'll become a little bit stronger. My shepherd knows exactly what stream to take me to so that we don't get caught up in the current, knocked over by it, maybe sucked under and drowned within the rivers. Now, he knows how to care for us. He knows what perils lie out there for us, and he can care for us, and he takes us there. And something else about our shepherd. When he takes us there, he doesn't exhaust us. He doesn't wear us out. Instead, he restores my soul. He's not going to try to get us to the destination so that he can hurry up and make his mealtime on time. He's not the priority. He makes us a priority in his care for us and what he does with us. And he guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Our shepherd knows something, that our care, our delivery, our arrival to a place and how we do that, it's a direct reflection on who he is as a shepherd. If we come in ragged and beat up, it reflects his neglect. If we come in pure, kept, watched over, it reflects on him. When you've got cows, you'll often brand them to show that cow belongs to me. But this sheep says, here's the deal. We are the brand of our God. And where we go, we reflect him and the care that he has for us based on the fact of the way that we've been cared for up to this point. So he leads us down the right path. And the right path, by the way, is not always the easiest. And the right path isn't always the shortest. It's not always the smoothest. Sometimes, though the path may have that, it can be the most perilous for other reasons. He knows the best path. Sometimes that path is even dark and scary. But even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Sheep says, why would I be scared just because I'm in the dark? I know who goes with me. My shepherd actually traverses with us, walks beside us. And if it's dark, you might ask, well, how would I know that he's there if I can't see? And he says, well, it's because of the rod that he carries. Great tool that he'll use. And as we go along in the dark, one of the things the shepherd would do is he would take that rod and he would just place it on the back of the sheep, maybe even stroke it just a little bit. Just a very gentle way of sort of touching it or nudging it and saying, I'm here. I see you. I notice you. You can't see me, but you can feel me. And because of that, there is no fear. Fear is taken away. Do you know how wonderful it is to go through life and to not have to be scared and afraid? Do you know how few people on this planet get to live that way? Fear will separate a flock like nothing else. Nothing else. If a wolf or a predator were to come in amongst the herd, sheep will scatter. Chaos reigns. In fact, it's such a stressful event that the pregnant sheep, in their fear and strain, can tighten their insides such that they have an abortion on the spot, emit the baby sheep out right there, and now are lighter to then take off and to run and to be free. Nobody has a plan when that kind of chaos comes on. And what's a sheep going to do? They have no fangs to protect themselves. They have no claws. Only thing a sheep has in its defense is a bad smell. That's it. What are they going to do? They don't have to fear if they have a great shepherd. The rod that's spoken of here, it's a much shorter device, maybe about the length, 2.5-3 feet long. And it's used much more like a club. And a very skilled shepherd could take that rod, and if an enemy were to come into the camp, they can fire that thing off in such a way that it can work almost like a bullet, hit an animal or a predator broadside. A really skilled one can go for the head to either knock them out or to kill them, but to stop that enemy. And the sheep says, that rod is a good thing. Every once in a while, a shepherd will use a rod on its own sheep. If one is getting too close to a precipice, doesn't have time to get to it to call it back, that rod will come out to stop them and arrest them. And the sheep knows, these are the tools that my shepherd uses to care for us and to protect us, to give us that security, to give us a freedom from fear, and to give us the knowledge, he sees me and he knows me. He knows I'm here. He knows my name. The rest of the psalm takes a twist. We don't necessarily hear from the sheep himself. What we do is we hear from David, and he likens himself here to a sheep. And he speaks of his great shepherd, his God, that cares for him. David was a fellow, as many of you know, he'd experienced a lot of threats and danger along the way, whether as a shepherd and wild animals or as a king and wild kingdoms or wild kings that would come after him. And so he had survived a number of different things. But what the psalm does is it highlights the fact that it isn't about merely survival, that his great shepherd could do something. He could take a threat and turn it into actually a triumph. Not just succeed, but to triumph over these enemies. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. The great shepherd took David's enemies and made them powerless so that they couldn't do anything to him. In fact, what he would do is he was going to take those enemies and he was going to make them sit on the sidelines and watch while he would have a meal with David. You, my enemies, get to watch as my favor is given unto this one, my sheep, my lamb, and care for him. And David knew something. He didn't have to work to curry the favor maybe of an enemy or an adversary king to work the politics out for the sake of the nation. He didn't even have to curry the favor necessarily of somebody in his kingdom who might bring him problems. He knew something. God will take care of the enemies. He'll take care of that. He just calls me to dine at his table with him. My God has anointed my head with oil. Oil is one of those surplus items, you know. As you grow olives in your land, God has to provide the means for you to grow that olive. But then you take it and you squeeze it and you extract from that olive the fat. That's where you get the oil from. And it's a sign of abundance that God has provided for you and provided abundantly. And now we can take this item of abundance, this oil, and he says, he will anoint me with it. It marks me out. It separates me from others so that they, looking on, can see, look how my God has given exceedingly abundant to me. Also, my cup overflows. It's the same thing with wine. You can only have the wine if you grow the grapes, and you have to have enough grapes. And God has done that. And as a result, we not only have what we need, the cup flows over. God has abundantly provided for us and given us way more than what we need. Sometimes whenever I sit down to a table at a meal, and I throw this for your considerations too, have you ever stopped to think really how you live in a very unusual time right now? We are an anomaly. Because for millennia before us, people always were afraid and wondered, where will our next meal come from? We don't do that. You know what our biggest problem is? What are we not going to eat so we don't gain weight? This was a day when weight was a display that your God had cared for you and provided for you. It's an excuse you're allowed to use today. Don't have to worry about that exercise. Hey, God's blessing me. But to be able to not live in want, that was the mark. And if you're not going to live in want, then that requires something. And Psalm 23 shows us it requires that you have a great shepherd. Somebody who is looking over you. And this great shepherd has a character about him, as well as a power and an ability about him. He's got to have both for you to feel this. And he's got to do this over time. And that's why this sheep can say, I don't want. I don't have to worry about my circumstances, because all I got to do is look to the shepherd, the great shepherd. The circumstances will play out. He'll take care of me. And he's confident that what has gone on in his life up to this point is not going to end here. It's going to continue in the days ahead and throughout eternity. The shepherd has sent ahead two sheepdogs. You know what their names are? They're called Goodness and Loving Kindness. And it's those sheepdogs that come around and they surround me and will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. If I take this psalm and just try to condense it into its most basic theme, that central idea, here's what I come up with. If you want to not want, then you will want to want the great shepherd. Now, that just woke a whole bunch of you up. As you're trying, wait, I'm trying to track along. If you want to not want, you want to be someone who doesn't always live looking for what's that next thing? What am I going to be desiring? What am I going to be craving? What am I going to be needing? If you want to not want, then there is something you need to want. You want the great shepherd. Now, when we read Psalm 23, I think a lot of times we bring our experiences in here, don't we? Well, read something like this and we'll think, now wait a minute, Jesus is my great shepherd, but there have been times where I've wanted something still, and in fact maybe God didn't provide, he didn't give what I wanted. And history's shown many times that Christians may not have gotten something that they wanted along the way. In order to reconcile that, what we have to do is we have to go to Hebrews, where the writer of Hebrews tells us this about Jesus. He says he is the great shepherd, and then he clarifies what that means. He is the great shepherd brought up from the dead. As our great shepherd, we have to remember something. Jesus Christ has not promised to give us everything we want. He's not promised to make you happy. He's not promised to make you moral, to make you a better citizen, to make you a parent. You know what he's promised to you? He's done one thing. He came for one reason, and that's this: to make spiritually dead people alive. That's why he's come. That's why he's the great shepherd. And it's amazing to think that before Jesus could become the great shepherd, he himself would have to become a sheep, the very Lamb of God who's come to take away the sin of the world. So here's what he did for you. Instead of bringing a staff, this is what he brought. He brought a shovel. And he went to a cemetery. And he found a grave that had your name on it. And he began to dig. And he dug until he hit that box that was 6 feet under. And he cleared it out, and then he removed the lid and looked there at your corpse in there, and he took your hand and lifted you up and brought you out. You who were in that stench of death and sin, the darkness of sin, the fear of judgment, and he has brought you out of that, and he brings us into life again. And as you go in life, you begin to look around you and you see, you know what? The fields look a little bit greener now because of where I've been and now what I have to compare that to. They look a little bit greener. The water looks a little bit more clear. The paths, they don't look as difficult anymore. They look a little bit more open. And the darkness doesn't look nearly as dark as it did when I was 6 feet under. Instead, I've always got this, at the minimum, a pale light shining through in comparison. We have to have the very touch of God to remind us of this, don't we? To remind us of where we were and where we've come from, of his protection that we have, that covers us and guards us each day. The protection that says death can't keep you. You've already been delivered from it. What he did was he took his rod, he flung that thing at our adversary, death and sin. And he took them out. And then he brought them and he laid them alongside here so that they got to be spectators as you sat in fellowship with God himself. And he's taken away death's sting and you are free. You are free from fear. And he is the provider and he will continue to provide for you. So we abide with him forever. When we struggle with this whole idea of wanting things, there's something that necessarily goes with want. It's called comparison. We want something because we can compare it to something that maybe we don't have or we haven't experienced before. And I can liken it to being halfway up a ladder. If you're in a ladder, if you're in a hole in the ground, someone provides you a ladder and you begin to leave that and go up. And you start to go up, you always want to be moving up that ladder. If you ever have to get knocked back a rung or two, it's not very much fun. We don't like that at all. We find it very discouraging. Anybody who has ever had a paycheck reduced, you know exactly what I'm talking about when we discuss going backwards. Or a relationship maybe that dissolved. Preferred choices that were taken away from you when your health has gone south. We don't like that. It generates within us a want, and we don't want to go backwards. But what we have to remember something is when you've come to the bottom, or you've come from the bottom, and that's your point of comparison, then anywhere you are on this ladder, we can be grateful. Grateful that we've just been provided the ladder to get out of that hole. And any rung that we have is better. We've got to remember, our shepherd hasn't just delivered us from the bottom either. He had to go to the bottom, and then he had to go 6 feet under the ground on top of that to find us who are dead and to deliver us. So the minute we step foot on there, we're better off. And we can remember our great shepherd loves us, and he cares for us. And as we're going through these holiday seasons, or this holiday season, and those barrages keep coming back at us, and the things that we see that we want, and we want to arrest that. If we want one thing for Christmas, what ought it to be? We want to want the Great Shepherd. Because if we want the Great Shepherd, we really won't want to want anything else. He changes that for us. There's a pastor named Stephen Cole, and he shared this story. It's written by an anonymous 14-year-old, but it describes the plight that I'm talking about. The story says, "It was spring, but it was summer that I wanted. The warm days and the great outdoors. It was summer, but it was fall that I wanted. The colorful leaves and the cool, dry air. It was fall, but it was winter that I wanted. The beautiful snow and the joy of the holiday season. It was winter, but it was spring that I wanted. The warmth and the blossoming of nature. I was a child, but it was adulthood that I wanted. The freedom and the respect that comes with it. I was 20, but it was 30 that I wanted. To be sophisticated and mature. I was middle-aged, but it was 20 that I wanted. The youth and the free spirit. I was retired, but it was middle age that I wanted. Presence of mind without limitations. And now, my life is over. And I never got what I wanted." Be free from despair. Be free of comparison, of unmet desires. Be free from the deceit of wealth and of goods and what they bring. Be free from fear. Be free from judgment and of hell itself. If you want to not live in want, then want to want the great shepherd, Jesus Christ. Let's pray together.